Well, as Alexis said, my name is Ryan Kramer, and I'm an assistant policy analyst with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. I'm an attorney, so for the past year and a half, I've been heavily involved with the legal aspects of EPT. And today I'm going to be discussing some of these legal aspects of EPT and whether laws matter. So expedited partner therapy is a partner management technique for the control of chlamydia and gonorrhea through which medication is provided to the sexual partner of the patient without physical examination of the partner or partners. EPT has been proven effective in reducing reinfection rates of chlamydia and gonorrhea and is recommended by various organizations. So while EPT may be an effective tool to manage STDs, substantial legal barriers inhibit the practice of EPT, as it is generally below the professional standard of care to provide medication to someone other than your patient. Furthermore, it is believed that the provider concern for potential liability inhibits the practice of EPT. So this potential for liability exists in a complex legal environment, as EPT relevant laws exist within different sources of authority, such as statutes, which are laws in the traditional sense passed by the legislature, regulations, which carry the full force of law, though they're what we call promulgated by an administrative agency, and they typically play the role of filling in details in a statutory law. There are board policy statements, which is essentially an endorsement of a certain practice by a board, such as a medical board, yet they lack the force of law in court. And then there are others, such as judicial court opinions. EPT-relevant laws also differ based on the area of law that they address. Some address the practice of medicine, some address the practice of pharmacy, others address infectious disease control. So many states have addressed these concerns by enacting statutes and regulations authorizing the practice of EPT, or through a professional licensure board endorsing the practice, although wide variation exists both in substance and form between these legal authorities. So while the clinical effectiveness of EPT has been shown, little is known as to the effectiveness of laws in encouraging the practice of EPT. This is important because of the substantial amount of resources the various organizations devote to policy issues surrounding EPT and the amount of resources the states expend trying to pass laws. So the primary objective of this study is really to examine the association between laws and policies authorizing EPT and the receipt of EPT among gonorrhea cases across the U.S. So we use data from the STD Surveillance Network, or SUN. SUN includes 12 Sentinel surveillance sites, which is comprised of state and local health departments. Each site interviewed by phone a random sample of individuals diagnosed with gonorrhea from cases reported to the health department during 2010 within 30 days of diagnosis. In terms of our legal variables, we collected and compiled EPT-relevant laws and policies from a variety of sources, including CDC's EPT website and the Westlaw Legal Research Database. So for our outcome measures, the question of primary interest to us on the SUN survey was whether the patient had received medication or a prescription for his or her sex partners. For independent variables, we first examined various demographic and provider characteristics as listed on this slide. And for our independent variable primary interest, the law, we looked at three things. First, we looked at professional licensure board policy statements in support of and in opposition of EPT. Second, we looked at the legal status determination of each state based on the Hodge study cited herein as it existed on CDC's website in 2010, which represents the probable legal status of EPT within each state as determined by attorneys. And lastly, we looked at state laws that explicitly legalize EPT for gonorrhea, which include statutes and regulations. I will refer to these as GC-EPT laws. So this map represents the 12 sites participating in SUN during 2010, where the stars represent the location of the local health departments that are participating in SUN. It should be noted that there is a slight deviation in the coding of the legal status determination from that of CDC's website. Green, permissible on this map, corresponds directly to a green, permissible status on CDC's website, while blue, EPT not permissible on this map, is the logical opposite. It encompasses states that are not green on CDC's website, which would either be called potentially allowable in colored orange or prohibited in colored red. Additionally, this reflects the legal status of EPT during 2010, the time frame of the SUN data collection. So as you can see, three discrete categories of EPT permissibility emerge from this scheme. The first is states where EPT is considered permissible and the state has a law authorizing EPT for gonorrhea. See California. The second is it states where EPT is considered permissible, yet the state lacks an EPT law for gonorrhea, see Colorado. And lastly, EPT is not considered permissible, and the state lacks an EPT law for gonorrhea, see Virginia. Our legal status variable was highly correlated with the two policy statement variables. Therefore, we assessed the relationship between the three variables and our outcomes separately. For our bivariate analysis, we used chi-squares to assess differences in site legal status across all 12 sites, and policy statements across the 12 sites that do not have a law authorizing EPT for gonorrhea within their state. We then analyzed the variable significant at p less than 0.1 in bivariate analysis in an adjusted logistic regression model, which included only the site legal status variable. Analyses were adjusted to account for the clustering by site and were weighted for non-response. So looking at the receipt of EPT across the three legal status GC EPT law categories of EPT permissibility across all 12 states, there is a statistically significant difference between these three categories. And once again, GC EPT laws refer to statutes, which are traditional legislative laws, and regulations, which are promulgated by administrative agencies. EPT was clearly practiced the most in states that had both a GC EPT law and where EPT was considered permissible. Yet EPT was practiced at a higher rate in those states in which EPT was considered permissible than ones they were not, GC EPT law notwithstanding. In those states that did not have a GC EPT law, which was seven of the sites, we looked at the rates of practice based on the presence of a state medical board policy statement. And to reiterate, medical board policy statements are essentially an endorsement of the practice that, while persuasive, they lack the force of law in court. So the three categories were, yes, a state has a medical board policy statement and it prohibits EPT. Yes, there is a state medical board policy statement and it prohibits EPT. And no, there is not a state medical board statement within this state that addresses EPT. EPT was practiced at a much higher rate in states that had the support of their state medical board as compared to states that did not have a medical board policy statement at all. So in those states without a GC EPT law, which again was seven of the sites, we also looked at the rates of practice based on the presence of a non-medical board policy statement. These include licensure boards that do not regulate physicians, such as boards of nursing and boards of pharmacy. EPT was once again practiced at a much higher rate in states that had the support of these boards. The only variable we looked at in our logistic regression model was the combined legal status GC EPT law variable. In adjusted analysis, there was a significant finding on this combined variable. The odds of receiving EPT in a state where EPT is considered permissible that also had a GC EPT law was almost 25 times greater than in a state without a GC EPT law where EPT is not considered permissible. In states without a GC EPT law and where EPT is considered permissible, the odds of receiving EPT were approximately 7.1 times greater. So the primary conclusions of this study are that, first, providers practice EPT at a higher rate in jurisdictions with favorable legal environments, with it being practiced more in jurisdictions in which EPT is considered permissible than in states in which EPT is not considered permissible. Among jurisdictions that are considered permissible, EPT is practiced at a much higher rate among jurisdictions that also have a law authorizing EPT for gonorrhea. So in states that do not have a law authorizing EPT for gonorrhea, providers practice EPT at a higher rate in jurisdictions where it is endorsed by their state medical board than in jurisdictions where it is not. So there are some limitations to this study. The first is that only 12 jurisdictions participating in SUN during this time frame, which really had three implications. The first implication was that our sample may not be nationally representative or even representative of the state that it was within, for that matter, because the SUN sites were really isolated to urban areas. The second implication is that it resulted in relatively small sample sizes. And the third and final implication is that it produced less legal environment across states, limiting the comparisons that we could make. The second limitation is that the legal status determination is a subjective measure of the legal status of EPT in a state, as subjectivity is inherent in legal judgment. Additionally, while it's not its intended use, it's at least possible that in states, the state legal status determination actually affects provider practice as an independent source of authority, as providers likely look to the CDC's website in determining whether or not EPT is permissible within their state. And the last limitation is that the study is not longitudinal, so causality cannot necessarily be inferred from our results. So, as EPTs practice more within jurisdictions with favorable legal environments, it is plausible to say that state laws play a role in facilitating the practice of EPT. Equally important is that the support of the state medical board appears to play a large role as well. This could be explained by the fact that physicians stay very up to date with the positions of their state medical boards, as this is the entity that is overseas and has the authority to revoke their license to practice medicine. So, even in states where they have a law, a formal recognition of the state medical board's support could also support the practice of EPT. Thank you.